This is Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, the radio program that challenges the anti-aging cultural narrative for women in midlife. Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous is produced at CJSF 90.1 FM, the campus-based community station at Simon Fraser University, which is located on the unceded ancestral homelands of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Kwikwetlem peoples. We broadcast a new episode on the second Wednesday of the month between 10 and 11 a.m. I'm Robin Erickson, and I talk with women who are aging outside the beauty myth and into their power, honoring their experience and celebrating their strength. This is episode number 4 of Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. And today my guest is Carla Bergman, who is an independent scholar, filmmaker, and producer. She co-authored the book Joyful Militancy, Building Thriving Resistance in Toxic Times, published by AK Press, and edited the book Radiant Voices, which just came out through Touchwood Editions. Carla is currently working on a film about language and decolonization called Women of the Bones, Pathways to Belonging. Welcome, Carla, to the show.
So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making this work. I'm always excited to be able to talk with women about what it means to be 50 and fabulous and feminist. So one of the things that you know, when I was naming the show, I recognized that was one of the things that I recognized was a triple threat for women our age was indeed to be feminist, 50-ish, and fabulous. But as women, we come with our own set of characteristics and traits, which sort of give us a threatening quality. Do you know what you might say about yours?
Wow, that's a big question.
I know.
Are you? I love the name of your show. I think it's great. I love that it's a threat against patriarchy. are you thinking like three words that kind of guide me or what I bring to the world?
Yeah.
Like who I am, like who I be.
Yeah.
It's interesting as words are real, you know, people have their spiritual practices or they, you know, different things they do to get through. And words are one of the things that I do. I pick a word that guides like kind of an internal work of the year and then I do like a solstice word with my family, more of like an ethos. So it's something I definitely think of as it changes yearly. But I think I have like two that come to mind right away for that question. I didn't know that was going to be the question. But I think trust, because, and I, what I mean by that is like really trusting myself, and trusting the path that I'm on and trusting my power and trusting even the struggle and trusting the people around me to show up and, just be there for each other is definitely stepping into my 50s and my power. And then the other one that's like really big that I mean, trust is sort of something that's been guiding my life for a while, but the one that's really changed in the, as I've gone into my 50s is it's easier for me to be my true self. So I was thinking about the word authenticity, which I guess is connected to confidence, but I just really feel that I can be more authentically myself. And I mean, that's really connected to patriarchal ways of silencing and holding back women's power. So I'm really excited about that word. So trust and authenticity. And then one that's probably more of an ethos when I think about my kin and the people around me, is, or a principle, something that's just like, I think, connects to how I am, is generosity. And I just see it as a way of interrupting capitalist ways of engaging with each other. You know, another way would be mutual aid, but I think like the act of mutual aid, like, is such an abstract idea. So I was thinking of just being, showing up and being generous with our resources, but also with ourselves to each other, is really another way of stepping into my power in my 50s.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful combination of words, because what I hear is, in my own sort of understanding of those words, is that they're inseparable from each other, right? We
right.
can't be generous if we don't have a trust about things. You know, we can't go into generosity with a scarcity mindset and fear guiding us. It has to come from that place of the heart, and that authentically, genuinely, essentially, I think that as human beings, we do have a lot of heart.
Mm-hmm.
And especially as women, you know, if we're allowed to have that be our guide, and, you know, outside of the capitalist patriarchal system, then those are definitely tied together in my mind.
No, I like that. Thank you.
So
that's great. That's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just going to share that my word for my birthday this year was humor, because I could be just a little bit too serious sometimes. So I was trying to, like, I'm trying to bring humor into, you know, like a little bit of humor about myself, I think, more than anything.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me too. You know, when I was, I think about this a lot, because when I was in grade 5, I think there was a class clown in our school, and I just was so envious of his ability to really crack people up, and I wanted so badly to be funny, but I'm realizing as I'm getting older that I am funny. You know,
yeah.
I see the world in odd and interesting and very unique ways that are often kind of funny, and they make people laugh. And so, you know, for me anyways, that piece of authenticity is just allowing myself to be funny, and also, you know, kind of the joke's on me, and you know, allow myself to be vulnerable and within the humor.
Yeah.
So
beautiful.
Yeah. I definitely appreciate that too.
Good.
And so one of the things that I like to chat about on the program is something that we've touched upon a little bit, and that's vulnerability, and more so how it has either started to play out in a larger way as you've turned 50, or, you know, reached this age, in terms of daring. You know, do you consider yourself daring? How do you think about daring?
Yeah, it's not a word that I had really thought about much. One of the things that happened when I first turned 50, which was 3 years ago, was I really had this desire, and it was almost something that I didn't have any much choice, but to really go back and look at my childhood through a different lens, like not just the one kind of narrative that was the loudest. And so I took this idea of breaking my story apart, and reclaiming some of the ways I was as a child. Because it's funny you say that about the humor. I was a bit of the class clown. And I think people who have known me in the last 20 years, they wouldn't say that about me. I don't think they would say, oh, Carla's really funny. You know? And so just in terms of being daring, too, that was something that like fearlessness is more, I think, the word that speaks to me. I don't know if they would be considered similar, but going back to like that child version of me who was more fearless, more funny, more, and it's not even, I wasn't that carefree because life wasn't actually particularly easy as a child, but there was narratives, there were stories within the stories that that showed me how daring I could be. So I think I still have some work to do around that one because I was, it's good that you're asking because I don't have a lot to say about it. I mean, I think I can be fearless, but daring is a bit, I think I'm just starting to wake up to that. Maybe that's for later 50s and 60s, maybe, for me. Yeah.
Well, it's all a work in progress, right?
Yeah, I'm curious what does it mean to you? I think that maybe that would spark more in my brain, but...
Yeah, it's... I think perspective is also part of what plays into this because I don't consider myself particularly daring. And yet, if you would ask any of my friends, they see me as very courageous, which is linked to being daring and, you know, doing those things that, you know, might be fearful or... looked like giant steps. Mm-hmm. But I don't really think about it in that way. That tension, I guess, between, you know, how we see ourselves and how other people see us, I think is also interesting because, like I said, I don't consider myself particularly daring, but most of the people in my life would say that I am. But I don't feel daring. I don't feel fearless. I kind of have the attitude, well, if it's, you know, if you're going to do it, you have to just do it and jump in with 2 feet. Otherwise, what's the point? And I'm getting better, hopefully, at falling down and getting back up about it, because I think that that's also part of what we hold ourselves back about, you know, feeling like we're going to make an idiot of ourselves or, you know, someone's going to think that we look stupid and we just have to get over it.
Yeah, it's true. I think perspective is everything about it, because everyone's at... has different ideas of what it means to be daring, and my daring, like what I'm, my actions might really feel daring to some people, but to myself they might feel like I'm just starting to step out of who I am,
mm-hmm.
like being who I am. So it's degrees and comfort and desires and just ways of being in the world. Yeah.
And letting your authenticity really shine. You know, and what feels genuine to you might feel very, very different and very daring if I were to do that.
Right.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. in this vein of sort of daring and fearlessness and vulnerability, I'm curious as to how you feel like you might break the rules of being 50, or how you demonstrate or live out beyond non-conforming to the status quo. What does that look like for you?
that's a good one. I don't really think so much in age in terms of expectations on how one should be or act. And I definitely, the people I spend the most time with are quite a bit younger than me. And a few are older. Like, you know, like the age is, and how to be and how to look is such a social construct that we're we're forced into that starts with schooling, in terms of being in with an age group and being compared and contrasted against each other. So I've definitely, I feel on the edge of that, just in that way I am and run my life and engage with the world. So I just don't think that there's a way to be at 15, you know, like I don't have a benchmark that I'm checking off. So right away, I feel like I guess I'm breaking those rules. If there are those rules, like, I don't know, probably in some magazines, there's lists on how you're supposed to be and look. I remember being younger and the women who are turning 50 in my life, like it was at a time when, I'm thinking like late 70s, early 80s, where, you know, women who wore blue jeans in their 50s, they were frowned on. And like, so I think I don't know if that's what you mean, but I remember that culture big time. And that definitely doesn't seem to be as prevalent. I don't know if does that resonate with you? As I remember it being a big deal and a lot of judgment at women who wore a certain amount of makeup or, you know, they were called cougars. And I know that that's probably still around, but... I don't know if I'm even like I don't feel part of that world, so I don't know if that's even still out there, but I don't know.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, and I think that because I'm quite unplugged from a lot of popular culture, I'm standing outside of what that status quo might look like, also dictated by magazines and television and all of those things, but I think that there are sort of rules, you know, that women have always been expected to sort of play by certain rules. Yeah. And I don't think that that's any different for women who are in our 50s. Those rules change, but yeah, I think that even not paying attention to what those rules are allows us to break them because we're not paying attention to them. And the more nonconforming we are, then the more we can role model that for others and the younger generation to continue the trend, which mm-hmm. is also exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I had to age in the way that my mom's generation was sort of expected to age, where, you know, not wearing blue jeans, for instance, was a real thing, that's craziness.
Right.
You know? And, you know, not showing your ankles or your wrists or, you know, wearing bare arm shirts because, you know, your flabby arms might show or whatever.
Yeah. Like particularly in the North American culture. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's lots of silliness. We're going to have a bit of a pause and hear one of the songs that you brought for us to play. Do you want to give an intro about why you chose this song from Tracy Chapman?
Sure. I chose it because till this day, when I hear it, I feel I can go back to the moment when I made a decision to change my life completely and run towards my life. There's often this idea that we run away from things, and I made a decision to run towards my life. And there's a line in the song that just brings tears. You know, I'm brought right back to it. And I'm so grateful for Tracy Chapman for writing it. And it's still relevant. And I hope it inspires other people who are feeling stuck or, and not just stuck, but, maybe feeling like there's no way out, to maybe think about this idea of running towards your freedom instead of away from something.
So beautiful. Tracy Chapman and Fast Car here.
fast car. I want a ticket to anywhere. Maybe we make a deal. Maybe together we can get somewhere. Any place is better. Starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself, I got nothing to prove. Get a fast car. I got a plan to get us out of here. Been working at the convenience store. Managed to save just a little bit of money. Won't have to drive too far. Just cross the border and into the city. You and I can both get jobs and finally see what it means to be living. See, my old man's got a problem. Yeah, but the bottle, that's the way it is. He says body's too old for working. His body's too young to look like his. My mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said somebody's got to take care of him. So I quit school and that's what I did. You got a fast car. Is it fast enough so we can fly away? You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. Someone. You got a fast car. We go cruise and entertain ourselves. Still ain't got a job. Now work in the market as a checkout girl. I know things will get better. You'll find work and I'll get promoted. We'll move out of the shelter. Buy a bigger house and live in the suburbs. I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. Speed so fast, it felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us, and your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. I got a job that pays all our bills. Instead of drinking late at the bar, see more your friends than you do your kids. I'd always hope for better. Thought maybe together you and me find it. I got no plans, I ain't going nowhere. So take your fast car and keep on driving. So I remember when we were driving, driving in your car. So fast, I felt like I was drunk. City lights lay out before us. Your arm felt nice wrapped around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belonged. I had a feeling I could be someone, be someone, be someone. You got a fast car. Fast enough so you can fly away. You gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way.
And welcome back to Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous, where my guest today is Carla Bergman, an independent scholar, filmmaker, and producer. That was lovely. Little revisit.
Yeah, I'm all emotional.
I remember too when that song first came out on the radio, and it did spark a lot of emotion about freedom, and that you could just, you know, kind of break it out on your own and make your life happen. So very empowering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for playing it.
I want to move our conversation a little bit and talk about curiosity with you, because I think, you know, we were talking a little before the break about these rules of when we become 50-year-old women, and there's something in the rules in the back of my head that say, as we age, we lose our curiosity, and I don't think that that's true. And so I'm curious to hear what your take on curiosity is, and how that plays out in your life. What are you curious about?
Oh, that's so great. I love being curious. I think most people, if they really sit down and think about when curiosity started getting stomped out of their life, they could probably pin it to like sometime when they were irritating an adult, whether it was a parent or an aunt or an uncle or probably a teacher. Right? Like, I mean, I have a joke that I always say that I'm only certain about one thing, and that is to be uncertain. And I think, like, they go hand in hand for me. In my work as a writer and thinker around social movements and radical places, particularly through the book Joyful Militancy, like, it's a book of questions. It's a book of curiosity. There's no answers in that book, and that is really frustrating for a lot of people. But I think that I think it's so important to remain curious and open to problem solve, to be collaborative, to have a thriving life, to live in harmony not only with other humans but more than humans. I think it's our way towards solving some of the largest problems we're facing. I think it's everything. I think curiosity needs to be reclaimed. I think part of why it gets shut down in children so quickly is because people are busy and it's not their fault. You know, it's not necessarily the adult's fault. It's part of conditioning. We're busy. I mean, I have a couple kids. I know what it was like. Got a million things to do, and they're constantly hitting me with curious questions. But yeah, I think probably the cousin of curiosity is patience, and we just need both of them to be embraced a lot more, and I think we would have a much better ecosystem in our little orbits, you know, our little worlds, and then that would grow and expand to other people's worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I love it. Yeah.
I really like the correlation that you make with the patience is the partner of curiosity, and that those two, you know, need to walk hand in hand. And I've never really thought about it in that way, but as soon as you said it, I was like, oh, of course. Because I think sitting with that inquiry, or sitting with those questions that we have, and especially in our society where we want such immediate response, so many immediate answers, that we become impatient for the big questions to get answered, or, you know, the big revelations to come to us. But without that process in the meantime, we're not getting anywhere.
Yeah, that's true, right? Because it's it just kicks a lot of people out of the conversation, out of the decision making. Yeah. And it, we're not getting the right solutions, clearly. I mean, there's a, I mean, in terms of like how we're going to move forward, like, in, you know, there's not enough philosophizing, not enough questions.
Mm-hmm.
There was this idea of like, if you want some answers for, you know, like, I just think there's going to be more questions, you know, like the more questions you ask, the more questions there are. If you're coming at it from a curious place, it doesn't mean that, there can't be moments of clarity and moments of doing an action and having, you know, because that's really important. We do need to do things. But to remain curious through that allows for failure. It allows for mistakes. It allows for being human. I think it's just super important. I wish it was more of an ethos. Like, it was something that we collectively just all gravitated towards and held up. And I think children, we look to, I think we can solve most of our problems if we just look to children, before it gets stymied out of them. Like, if you look to children, like, curiosity is just, it's just there, right?
Yeah. It's they're innately curious about the world.
You know, they're just philosophers.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly wondering about things. You know, instead of theorizing and coming up with quick answers.
Well, and the innovation with which they see the world is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
yeah.
Which I think, you know, is definitely what the world needs now.
Yeah.
Getting back to the idea that patience is sort of the co-collaborator with curiosity, how do you find patience?
Hmm.
Where do you find patience?
I think it comes back to trust, like trusting the struggle or the process, trusting the discomfort of not knowing. I also think that listening is key because, and I don't just mean listening to the other people. I mean listening to yourself, like, deeply and allowing for patience to grow. I think I've had it's interesting because I feel like I'm high strung and I'm always wanting, I'm moving from one project to the next and, I feel completely impatient, but a few friends have reflected to me that it's my superpower, that I'm actually really patient. And I don't know why that is or where it comes from. I have no idea. I think I'm pretty good at looking at the long view, like, so thinking about some things take a while to germinate. Like, I, you know, plant the seed and have the idea, and I where my patience come in is I can wait like 3, 5, 10 years before I do something with it. I think that's what they see, but I, in terms of interpersonal relationships and allowing curiosity and questions to grow, I think listening and trust are the two kind of things that are playing out there.
I think that patience is a practiced skill also. And we don't get a lot of time in the world to practice patience all the time, and to practice patience in a way that doesn't sort of shut us down, you know? Yeah, I'm curious about that too. I think my friends would also call me patient. And so the things that you were saying about, you know, it being a superpower and just, you know, sort of having that long-term view or that big picture view of things just taking time, sometimes helps.
Yeah, and sometimes things don't happen because, which is great, right? Like, I feel like I've been saved, phew, by my being patient, not pushing things through, right? And like, oh, thank goodness that never got out in the world, or I didn't do that thing, or, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And then I'm curious in this same sort of stream of questioning on curiosity and inquiry, is how do you keep an open mind and to keep with all of the experience that we gain over life from getting bored or feeling jaded or kind of in that been there, seen that, done that frame where curiosity and wonder still is able to play?
Again, I think I don't have a natural predilection towards that. I think that's a practice. My partner embodies that way of being. Like, we always joke of, they call him Wonder Boy because I swear it's like he's never seen a sunset before in his life every day.
How beautiful.
Oh my God. So that helps. We kind of embrace, like me and my friends, we really embrace the word or the notion of delight, delight in things. Bell Hooks once said, I saw her speak, actually, I don't know if she's ever written this, but I saw her speak and I wrote it down because she said, imagination is found in delight. And I just, like, I held that thing for so long. I was like, yes, right? So I think... I need to throw the word in delight, delighting in things, in myself and each other. I think it's like when people go, what's the secret of like raising kids that are thriving? And I was like, you know, obviously I just always delight in them when they walk into a room, because people feel it instinct. Like you feel it in your body when you walk into a room and people aren't delighting in you. Like, cause they have this like, oh, Carla's here. Right. Like, or there's like a body language. And I think, like, I might have got off the track here, so sorry, you pull me back in.
Yeah, no,
it's like a practice of delighting. And my partner is the delighter. I've had a few friends over the years who have said, what is it, you know, vast mean? What is that like? Like, every time you come home, you get delighted in. I'm like, well, I'd be curled up in the ball, pretty depressed without it, is what I think. So I think it just isn't, it's just an incredible, way of being or a practice to grab onto. And then I think the rest just happen. And then alongside that, on a creative level, I quit. I leave things. The minute I'm feeling not curious anymore and feeling like my head is banging against the wall and I'm, oh my God, I can't have this conversation ever again, I leave. I graciously remove myself from the project, from the collective, from the group, from the whatever. And I'm honest and I say why. I say I've lost my curiosity. And I think some of the most deadening words that a person can say in a group, in a collaboration, and anything is, that's been done before. It doesn't work. Like, I think in the minute you're there, leave. Get out, because it's not fair to the other people in the room, because it's never the same. There's different people in the room.
Right, yeah. The dynamic is changing.
But honor that feeling. If it's coming up, it's real for you. So leave. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm talking about creative projects or collectives or obviously you're not going to get up and leave your kids, hopefully. So, you know, you got to work. When you're feeling, when your kid asks, you know, your second or third kid asks the same question, you're maybe feeling not curious about the answer anymore or patience is wearing on you. I mean, whatever, that's life and you work through it with your kid. I think you just got to practice at it.
I love that level of confidence of being genuine enough in knowing what you need and what you want to be able to say no to things that aren't serving you.
Yeah. that's definitely something that's come with age.
Yeah.
I think I've always been someone who leaves and knows when to leave, but I didn't leave. There's a really awesome collective housing thing down in Seattle, and they have a saying up that says arrive and leave well, and that's what I've tried to cultivate. That's what I didn't do before. That's what's changed. I think I've always left when things didn't feel right for me, but I didn't leave well. I just left, or left angry, or left frustrated.
And right.
Now I aim to leave well. I strive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Those are words of wisdom, I think.
Oh.
Really. Yeah, because I can't imagine that any of us have found ourselves in a position where we haven't wanted to leave something, but, you know, knowing how to arrive and leave well, nobody really teaches you those things. So, yeah.
The siren's going by.
I can hear that. I also wanted to comment on delight. Mm-hmm. And how lovely that that idea of keeping delight in play keeps imagination in play.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been, you know, on and off gratitude practices of all sorts for forever and ever, and the idea of delight sort of reminded me of just when I practice gratitude and the delight that it makes me feel and how much my mind sees all kinds of other things. It's like all of a sudden the door just opens and then I see all these other things that I can delight in. And that it's really a snowball and ripple effect that just keeps going and going and going and fractals out beyond and into the world.
I love that. I hadn't really put them together, but it's so true. I have a gratitude practice too. I immediately smile. I can be sad, 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 but the minute I really do that intentional practice around gratitude, whatever it is, a smile comes up.
Yeah.
I never put it together. It's so true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I would say my partner, who is a walking delighter, my friend calls it the delighters. That's our... Only delighters are allowed to be around. and I think, he walks through the world with anchored in this notion of gratitude.
Mm.
Yeah, I never really put it together. Thank you.
Yeah. I think this is a good time to take our second song break.
Okay.
And again, I will get you to give us an introduction to what we're going to hear.
So this is Grouper. I've forgotten her name. I think her name's Liz, and that Grouper's her kind of the project name of her work. If it's people who don't know, she's experimental, drone-y, beautiful music, and my son introduced me to her and bought me her album, and I just did so much work with her on in the background, and this work, this music just makes me feel in ways that I'm not always open to feeling. So and I like that. My favorite piece that she does is the one we're going to play. And I didn't know it was about clouds. And the only thing I say I'm an expert at is cloud watching. So I thought it was interesting that I listened to the song for years and turned out it was a song about clouds, which I didn't know until I found it for you.
So, lovely.
Enjoy.
This is Grouper, Cloud in Places, here on Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous.
Ooh.
You can almost hear the clouds swirling around there in that song. That was really lovely. Grouper, Cloud in Places. And my name's Robin Erickson. I'm here with my guest, Carla Bergman, and you are listening to Triple Threat, Feminist, 50-ish, and Fabulous. Carla, I wanted to just touch on wisdom as the last kind of big idea of aging as women. What does wisdom mean to you? Do you feel like you hold wisdom about something or some things?
I think I'm curious about it. It's funny because I think it's one of those words that they're challenging for me to really grab on as a identifier. Maybe it's something that happens when I'm 80. I don't know. I was thinking about how wisdom is, you know, it's based on life experience. And so to me then, like if we could follow that through, then you can be wise about anything you've experienced. So then you could be wise at any age on anything you've experienced, at the very least, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if I think about it that way and kind of not in a non-linear, like aging way, like a non-hierarchical way, then I think I like it better. Feels more flatter and horizontal. Because I don't think like at point at any age you could be all wisdom. I mean, maybe Gandalf is the only one. or, you know, other wizard or witch. But yeah, I think the thing that's changed in my 50s is I do feel more open to giving solicited and even unsolicited advice that I never used to. I've always worked with young people, and they used to get really frustrated because I would just keep asking questions instead of giving advice. Because I was curious and uncertain, and I didn't have a once and for all answer, or I couldn't pin things down, or I didn't want to pin things down. And there was a joke, my son used to say that I would do that, but then I would say, well, here's what I actually think. And I would give my opinion eventually. So, but I've noticed that I'm more authentically stepping into that, I guess, knowledges that I hold, like my own personal knowledges based on my personal experiences. I feel more, at this point in my life, I guess, more open to sharing sooner in the conversation and less scared to, or I don't know why. I think it's because I experienced a lot of older people in my life when I was younger who were really bought into the idea that because they were in their 50s or 60s or 70s that they were wise and they could just throw their ideas at us with certainty and like this kind of authority, but I just felt they were lying half the time, or not even true, like straight up wrong often. Mm. Because it was based on ideology or a belief system that was not mine and it was outdated. Or so I have this kind of mixed feeling about the word, because it was used often as a weapon, weaponized to control. So maybe that's where my discomfort comes in with it. But I do think as we age that we have more life experience. So therefore we have more knowledges that are ours that we can share.
Mm-hmm.
And people can do, they can take or leave, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I would like to take away the power piece that comes, that often is attached to it. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's one of the ways that wisdom also gets weaponized, with women wielding it, also is that, you know, we're discouraged from having power. And so if we have wisdom about our own life experience, you know, there are numerous ways that we get shut down in the world out there. So becoming comfortable in sharing our knowledge and our life experience and what we have learned about it, I don't think it comes easily to us. I think it's becoming more easy for us, but yeah, not something that's necessarily been encouraged in my life.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's a good distinction. I think, like, when I'm talking about power, I'm talking about power over. And that it's true that that it's a power over us, that when we speak our truth or our wisdom, our knowledge, is that it's often belittled or called, you know, made fun of or disbelieved or part of patriarchy for sure.
Well, I always hope that I'll see it fall within my lifetime, but I think that's a lofty goal.
I have so much hope for this younger generation, though. Oh, my goodness. And, like, what the binaries are being busted along. Because part of what will take down patriarchy is to get rid of these social binaries.
Yes.
That really keep it in place. So
yeah.
I have hope. There's so much goodness happening.
I do, too. Yeah, working up here at the university and, you know, interacting with these young people who have all of this energy and new ideas and enthusiasm for change is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's lovely.
Well, I'm looking at the clock, and our time is so close to up that I want to give you an opportunity to, you know, just sort of have a last word if there's something that's just burning in your mind that you haven't been able to say.
Well, I guess I would just like to give my gratitude for the work you're doing. I think amplifying what these women's voices who are fabulous and 50 and the triple threat is just so, so important. But I also see you amplifying voices that aren't necessarily the typical leaders, and I think that is equally as important. I think amplifying different ways of being in the world is probably the most important thing we can be doing right now. And I just have deep gratitude for your work, and thanks for including me.
Oh, thank you. That means a lot to me, because I'm excited to hear from people who don't consider themselves leaders, but totally are in their own way. And I think we have something to learn from everybody that has something to say, which is everybody. So, yeah. All right. Thanks again, Carla. I hope the rest of your day goes really well.
You too. Enjoy the sunset tonight.
thanks so much.